and to make Flag lie under the covers with him, but the fawn kicked off the quilt as often as he drew it over him. He was content to sleep on the foot of the bed, and Jody awakened twice in the night and felt down to make sure he was still there. Flag was not as large as the nearly grown calf. His heart thumped in the darkness. The fortress that was the clearing was vulnerable. He drew the quilt over his head and was afraid to go to sleep again. But bed was a comfortable and a sleepy place on the first cold night in autumn. Penny got an early start for the foresters in the morning. The pack had not returned in the night. He hoped that perhaps one or two were wounded. Jody begged to go with him, but his mother refused outright to stay alone.
"It's all fun to you," she complained. "Can I go? Can I go? No thought of being a man and looking out for your ma."
His pride was touched. He patted her arm.
"Don't fret, ma. I'll stay and keep off the wolves. About time. I get the weak jerks thinking about them."
He felt bold after his father's assurance that the pack would not be seen in the daytime. But when Penny rode off on old Caesar, he was uneasy in spite of himself. He tied Flag in his room to a post of the bed and went to the sinkhole for water. On the way back, he was certain he heard sounds that he had never heard before. He looked back frequently and broke into a trot past the fence corner. He wasn't afraid, he told himself, but his mother might be. He chopped wood hurriedly and filled the kitchen wood box to overflowing and stacked a pile by the hearth in case his mother thought of it later. He asked if she needed meat from the smokehouse. She didn't, but called for a can of cracklings and a bowl of lard. She said,
"Now your pa went off and never said what to do with the poor calf, bury it or cook it for the dogs or save it for bait. Well, best wait till he says."
No further outside work was necessary. He bolted the kitchen door behind him.
"You put that fawn out," she said. "Ma, don't make me put him out. Why, the smell of him had just told the wolves from all over." "All right, but you got to clean up after him if he don't mind his manners." "I will."
He decided to study a speller. His mother fished it out from the trunk that held extra quilts and winter clothes and the deed to the Baxter land. He occupied himself with it all morning.
"I never seed you so content with that book," she said suspiciously.
He scarcely saw the words on the page. He wasn't afraid, he told himself again. But his ears were strained with listening. He listened all morning for a swift rush of padded feet. He listened for the sweet sound of old Caesar's hooves in the sand and his father's voice at the gate. Penny was back in time for dinner. He had eaten little breakfast and was hungry. He wouldn't talk until he had eaten his fill. He lit his pipe and tilted back his chair. Ma Baxter washed the dishes and brushed out the floor with a palmetto sweep.
"All right," Penny said. "I'll tell you just how it stand. It's like I figured. The wolves was about the worst destroyed by the plague of ary the creeters. This pack was here last night is all there is left. Buck and Lem has been to Fort Butler and Volusia. No wolves have been seed nor heared since the plague but these'ns. All us in a bunch. They worked over here from near Fort Gates and has been cleaning out stock all the way across. They ain't got to feed much, for they've been caught at it before they fed and drove off. They're purely starving, and night before last they got a heifer and a yearling bull of the foresters. Toward daylight this morning they heard 'em howling after they was here."
Jody now was eager.
"Will we get to hunt with the foresters?"
"That's it. I had me a good go around with them Jessies. We can't see it the same way about killing 'em. I want a couple of good hunts and traps around our lot and their corral. But the foresters is bent on pisoning 'em. Now, I ain't never pisoned a creeter, and I don't aim to."
Ma Baxter flung her dishcloth at the wall.
"Ezra Baxter, if your heart was to be cut out, he'd not be meat. He'd be purely butter. You're a plague-taked ninny, that's what you be. Leave them wild things kill our stock cold-blooded and us starve to death. But no, you're too tender to give him a bellyache."
He sighed.
"Do seem foolish, don't it? I just can't help it. Anyways, innocent things is likely to get the poison, dogs and such.
Better that than the wolves clean us out.
Oh, now, Ori, they ain't going to clean us out. They ain't like to bother Trixie nor Caesar. I misdoubt could they get their teeth through their old hides. They sure ain't going to mess up with dogs that fights as good as mine. They ain't going to climb trees and catch the chickens. They's nary other thing here to bother, now the calf's gone.
There's Flag, Pa.
It seemed to Jody that for once his father was wrong.
Pison's no worse than them tearing up the calf, Pa.
Tearing up the calf was nature. They was hungry. Pison just some way ain't natural. Tain't fair fighting.
Ma Baxter said,
It takes you to want to fight fair with a wolf, you...
Go ahead, Ori, ease yourself and say it.
If I was to say it, he'd take words I don't scarcely know to think, let alone speak.
Then bust with it, wife. Pisonin's a thing I just won't be a party to.
He puffed on his pipe.
If it'll make you feel better, he said, the foresters said worse than you. I know they'd mock me in the head when I'd taken my stand, and they done so. And they're fixing to go right ahead and set out the pison.
I'm proud there's men somewheres around.
Jody glowered at both of them. His father was wrong, he thought. But his mother was unfair. Something in his father towered over the foresters. The fact that this time the foresters would not listen to him must mean not that he was not a man, but that he was mistaken. Perhaps even he was not wrong.
You leave my pa alone. I reckon he's got more sense than the foresters.
She wheeled on him.
Now, Mr. Impudent Big Mouth, you'll get yourself frammed good with a bresh.
Penny rapped on the table with his pipe.
Leave off. Ain't it enough to have trouble with the animals without the family quarreling? Has a man got to die to find peace?
Ma Baxter turned back to her work. Jody skulked away to the bedroom and untied Flag and took him outdoors for a run. He was uneasy in the woods and didn't go far. He called the fawn in and went and sat with him under the hickory tree and watched the squirrels. He decided to gather hickory nuts before the squirrels finished the crop. Mast was plentiful, and the squirrels, because of the plague, were not. But he wished crossly not to divide the nuts on his own land. He climbed the tree and shook the limbs. The nuts fell in a shower, and he climbed down and gathered a pile. He took off his shirt and made a sack of it and filled it with nuts and took them to the house. He emptied the pile on the ground in the shed and spread them out to dry. When he put on his shirt, he realized that he had stained it past all washing with the juice from the hulls. It was a quite good shirt, with only one small patch on it where he had snagged the sleeve sliding down the roof of the corn crib. He grunted to himself. It was peculiarly difficult to know ahead of time what would get him into trouble and what would keep him out. However, when his mother was angry at Penny, she seldom noticed anything he did. She smoothed down through the afternoon. After all, the foresters would get the job done. Three of them rode in toward sunset. They had come to notify Penny of the exact location of the poison so that he might keep his dogs away from the trail. They had set it out ingeniously. They had done it entirely from horseback so that the wolves would not scent the hated taint of man. They had prepared chunks of raw meat from their killed heifer and yearling, handling it with pieces of buckskin over their hands while they inserted the poison. The three had separated and ridden over the trails the pack might be expected to follow. They had dug holes with pointed palmetto stems, leaning from the saddle, and dropped in the poisoned bait, raking leaves over it again with their sticks. They had brought the last trail back toward Penny's lot, in a line from the sinkhole where the wolves might water or wait for other game. Penny accepted the situation philosophically.
All right. I'll keep my dogs tied for a week.
They accepted a drink of water and a twist of Penny's tobacco, but refused supper with thanks. They wanted to be home again before night when the pack might return to the corral. They visited with Penny a few minutes and rode away again. The evening passed peacefully. Penny filled more shell cases, capped them, and loaded his gun. He loaded Jody's muzzle loader as well. Jody took it and propped it carefully by his bed. He was grateful to his father for including him in such preparations. He lay thinking after they were all in bed. He could hear his father talking with his mother. He heard him say,
"I got news for you. Buck told me Oliver Hutto, taking the boat from Jacksonville to Boston, figured on being there a while before he shipped again. He gave Twink Weatherby money, and she slipped off to Jacksonville and got on a boat and followed him. Lamb's raring. He says, do he meet Twink and Oliver? He'll kill 'em all, too."
Jody heard his mother's bulk, turning, creak the bed. She said,
"Now, if the gal's honest, why don't Oliver marry her and be done with it? If she's nothing but one of them little old Chippendales, why do we mess up with her?"
"I couldn't rightly say. Been so long since I was young, Buck, studying on courtin'. I disremember how Oliver might figure."
"Anyways, he hadn't ought to have let her foller him that away."
Jody agreed with her. He threshed his legs under the covers in fury. He was finished with Oliver. If he ever saw him again, he would tell him what he thought of him. He hoped most to see Twink Weatherby and pull her yellow hair or throw something at her. Because of her, Oliver had gone away without coming to visit them. He had lost him. He was so angry at him that he didn't care. He dropped asleep, painting enjoyable pictures of Twink wandering in the scrub and eating the wolf poison and falling dead in deserved agonies. Chapter 24. The Forester poisoning killed 30 wolves in 1 week. There was a pack left of a dozen or two that was wary and avoided the poison. Penny agreed to help with their extermination by the legitimate means of trap and gun. The pack ranged wide and never killed twice in the same place. It invaded the Forester corral one night. The calves bleated, and the Foresters poured out. They found the cows holding the wolves at bay. They had formed a ring with the calves in the center and were on the defensive with lowered horns. One calf was dying with a torn throat, and two had their tails bitten off, neatly at the rump. The Foresters brought down 6 of the pack. The next day, they set poison again, but the wolves didn't return. 2 of their own dogs found the bait and died horribly. The Foresters were willing to track down the rest of the pack in slower fashion. Buck came one evening at dusk to invite Penny to join them in a hunt the next morning at dawn. The wolves had been heard howling early that day at a waterhole west of Forester's Island. A long dry spell had followed the flood, and the high waters had shrunk away. The swamps and marshes, the ponds and creeks, were at nearly their usual level. What game was left could be counted on to visit various known waterholes. The wolves had made the same discovery. The hunt would serve 2 purposes. With luck, all the remaining wolves might be killed. Game also could easily be taken. The plague seemed to have run its course. Venison and bear meat again tempted the imagination. Penny accepted the invitation gratefully. There were enough foresters to make any hunt without outside help. It was generosity that had sent Buck to Baxter's Island. Jody knew it. He knew, too, that his father's knowledge of the ways of the game was always welcome. Penny said,
"Spend the night, Buck, and we'll get off soon as before day." "No. For do I come up missing at bedtime, they'll figure they's no hunt and not be ready."
It was agreed that Penny should meet them an hour or so before day, at the intersection of the main trail with their own. Jody tugged at his father's sleeve. Penny said,
"Can I carry my boy and my dogs?" "The dogs we counted on since Nell and Biggin was pisoned. The boy we hadn't figured on, but if you'll speak for him not to mess up the hunt..."
"I'll speak for him."
Buck rode away. Penny prepared ammunition and oiled the guns. The Baxters went to bed early. It seemed to Jody that Penny was leaning over him, shaking him awake before he had even had time to go to sleep. It was still night. Rising was always early, but there was usually at least a thin streak of light across the east. Now the world was as black as tar, and the trees still rustled with the night winds. There was no other sound quite like it. For a moment he regretted his anxiety of the evening before. Then he thought ahead to the hunt, and the excitement warmed him, and he jumped from bed into the cold air. He slid his feet along the snug softness of his deerskin rug as he pulled on his shirt and breeches. He hurried to the kitchen. A fire was crackling in the kitchen hearth. His mother was placing a pan of biscuits in the Dutch oven. She had an old hunting coat of Penny's over her long flannel nightgown. Her gray hair hung in braids over her shoulders. He went to her and smelled of her and rubbed his nose against her flannel breast. She felt big and warm and soft, and he slipped his hands under the back of the coat to warm them. She tolerated him a moment, then pushed him away.
"I never had no hunter act like such a baby," she said. "You'll be late for the meeting if breakfast's late."
But her tone was friendly. Jody sliced bacon for her. She freshened it in hot water, then dipped it in flour and put it in an iron skillet to fry to a crisp brown. He had not thought he was hungry, but the sweet nut-like fragrance of it was overwhelming. Flag came from the bedroom and sniffed, too. She said,
"You feed that fawn and tie him in the shed before you forget it. I'll not be tormented with him while you're gone."
He led Flag outside. The fawn was frisky and bolted away. He had trouble in following him and catching him in the blackness. He tied him first, then gave him a mash of meal and water. He said,
"You be good, and I'll tell you about the wolves when I get home."
Flag bleated after him. If it were only an ordinary hunt, he would almost rather stay home with him. But Penny had said that they had meant to kill off the last wolf in the scrub, and he might never see another again as long as he lived. When he went to the house, Penny had come in from milking. The quantity was short because of the early hour. Breakfast was ready. They ate hurriedly. Ma Baxter didn't eat, but put up a lunch for them. Penny insisted that they would be home again for dinner. She said,
"You've said that before, and then come in after dark with your belly pinching you."
Jody said,
"Ma, you're sure good."
"Oh, yes, when it's rations."
"Well, I'd a heap rather you was good about rations and mean about other things."
"Oh, I be mean, be I?"
"Only about just a very few things,"
he soothed her. Penny had saddled Caesar when he was at the barn. The horse stamped now, hitched at the gate. He knew a hunt as well as the dogs. They came with waving tails, gulped a pan of grits and gravy, and followed after. Penny slung a coil of rope and the saddlebags over Caesar's back, mounted into the saddle, and pulled Jody up after him. Ma Baxter handed their guns up to them. Penny said to Jody,
"Now take care how you swing that thing around. You kill your paw, and you'll rarely have to hunt for a living."
It seemed surely that day must break. The horse's hooves thumped in the sand. The road gave back the sound, then dropped behind them as it stretched before in silence. Strange, he thought, that the night should feel more silent than the day when most of the creatures stirred then and did their sleeping when the sun rose. Only a hoot owl cried, and when its crying ended, they rode forward into a dark emptiness. It was natural to speak in whispers. The air was chill. In his excitement, he had forgotten to put on his ragged jacket. He leaned close against his father's back.
"Boy, you ain't got on your coat. You want mine?"
He was tempted, but refused.
"I ain't cold," he said.
Penny's back was thinner than his own. It was his own fault that he had no coat.
"You reckon we'll be too late, Pa?"
"Reckon not. Maybe Dale'll hold off till we get there."
They were ahead of the foresters. Jody climbed down and tussled with Rip to warm himself and because the waiting was intolerable. He began to fear they had missed them. Then a clop-clop of hoofs sounded at what seemed some distance, and the foresters were there. All six had come. They greeted the Baxters briefly. The light wind was favorable, blowing from the southwest. If they didn't stumble on a wolf sentry, they might take the pack unawares. It would be long-range shooting at best. Buck and Penny took the lead, side by side. The rest followed in single file. A grayness that was scarcely light crept through the forest. There was an interval between daylight and sunrise that was an unreal hour. It seemed to Jody that he moved in a dream between night and day, and when the sun rose, he would awaken. The morning would be foggy, the grayness lingered in the fog, and seemed unwilling to rise through it. The two merged, joined against the sun that would tear them to tatters. The file of riders came out of the scrub and into an open area of grass and live oak islands. A favorite waterhole of the game lay beyond. It was a clear, deep pool, and something about the water was to the taste of the creatures. It was protected as well with marsh on two sides from which danger might be seen approaching, and forest on the other two, into which they might quickly retreat. The wolves had not yet come, if they were coming. Buck and Lem and Penny dismounted and tied the dogs to trees. A thin strip of color, like a yellow ribbon, lay low across the east. The autumn mist hung above it. Figures were visible only a few feet above the ground. At first the waterhole seemed deserted. Then bodies took shape here and there about it, as though the fog itself had solidified, still gray and tenuous. The antlers of a buck deer formed in the distance. Lem lifted his gun instinctively, then lowered it. The wolves were more important for the moment. Millwheel murmured, "I don't remember no stumps around that pond." As he spoke, the stumps moved. Jody blinked his eyes. The stumps were young bears. There were a good dozen of them. Two larger bears ambled slowly beyond them. They had not seen or winded the buck, or chose to ignore it. The curtain of mist lifted higher. The band of color broadened in the east. Penny pointed. There was movement in the northwest. The forms of the wolves were barely visible, slipping down in single file as the humans had done. The keen nose of old Julia caught a faint taint, and she lifted it high and wailed. Penny struck at her to hush her. She dropped flat to the ground. Penny whispered, "We ain't got a chance in the world of getting a shot this way. We can't get close enough." Buck's whisper was a growl. "How about a shot at the buck and maybe the old bears?" "Listen to me. One of us can slip around to the east and south and make a quick dash across the south marsh. The wolves will be too fur down to turn back. They won't go to the marsh. They're obliged to come out of the woods right past where we be now." Acceptance of the idea was immediate. "Go ahead." "Jody can do it as good as a man, and he's no shot. We'll need all our shots here." "All right." "Jody, you ride down just inside the edge of the woods yonder. When you get opposite that tallest pine, you cut right back across the marsh towards us here. Just as you turn, take a pot shot at the pack. Never mind trying to hit 'em. Now get going. Go fast, but quiet." Jody touched Caesar's rump and trotted away. His heart had jumped from its normal position and was beating somewhere high in his throat, his vision blurred. He was afraid he would never see the tall pine and cut in too soon or too late and bungle the whole business. He rode unseeing. He straightened his back and slid one hand along the barrel of his gun. A blessed stiffening and clarity came to him. He picked out the pine before he reached it. He swung Caesar's head sharply to the right, dug his heels into him, slapped his neck with the reins, and shot into the open. The marsh water flew under him. He saw the young bears scatter. He was afraid he had not come in far enough behind the wolves. The creeping pack ahead of him hesitated, on the verge of turning back the way they had come. He lifted his gun and shot behind them. They bolted in a mass. He held his breath. He saw them stream toward the scrub. He heard the barking of guns, and the sound was music. He had done his part, and it was out of his hands. He galloped around the south side of the pond toward the men. The tethered dogs lifted their voices. A single gun spoke now and again. His mind was clear. He wished that he had another shot. He was sure he could take it coolly and accurately. Penny's ruse had worked to perfection. A dozen of the gray bodies lay about on the earth. An argument was in progress. Lem wanted the dogs turned loose after the rest of the pack. Buck and Penny were opposed. Penny said,
Lem, you know we ain't got a dog can run down one of them streaks of lightning. They won't tree like a cat, and they won't turn at bay like a bear. They'll run forever. Buck said, He's right, Lem. Penny turned excitedly. Look at one of them young bears has done. They've treed. What say we have a go at catching them alive? Ain't there a good price on the East Coast for live critters?
That's what they say.
Penny swung up in the saddle, and Jody eased back behind him.
Take it easy, man. Slower you'll work on this, better we'll do.
Three of the spring cubs, motherless, perhaps, long enough to have forgotten discipline, had not even treed. They sat on their haunches, crying like babies. They made no effort to escape. Penny tied the three together and looped the end of the rope around a large pine. Some of the cubs had only climbed saplings. It was a simple matter to shake them out and tie them too. Two others were high in a larger tree. Jody, as the lightest and nimblest, climbed after them. They climbed higher above him, then scrambled out on a limb. He edged along the limb. It was ticklish work to shake it without falling off himself. The limb cracked faintly. Penny shouted to him to wait. An oak limb was cut and trimmed and handed up. Jody slid down the tree until he could reach it and climbed back. He poked it at the cubs. They clung as though they had grown to the limb. At last, they dropped. He climbed down. The old bears and the buck had vanished with the first shot. Two yearling bears showed too much fight to be taken alive. They were sleek and plump, and since both houses were in need of fresh meat, they were shot down for food. The take of cubs was 10. Buck said,
Now wouldn't Fodder Wing have loved to have seen this? Now I wished he was alive to see it.
Jody said, If I didn't have me flag already, I sure would carry one home. Penny said,
And you and Hit both get barred out together.
Jody went close and talked to the cubs. They lifted their sharp snouts, scenting him, and stood up on their hind legs. He said,
Now ain't you all proud you're going to get to live?
He moved closer and reached out a tentative hand to touch one. It raked its sharp claws across his sleeve. He jumped back. He said,
They ain't grateful, Pa. They ain't a mite grateful we saved him from the wolves.
Penny said,
You didn't look at his eyes good. You picked a mean un to pet. I've done told you, where there's twin cubs, one'll be friendly, and t'other'll be mean. Now see, can you find one's got a friendly eye?
I might not pick good. I'll leave him be.
The foresters laughed. Lem picked up a stick and began to tease one of the cubs. He poked it in the ribs to make it bite the stick. He knocked it over and it squealed in pain. Penny said,
Now kill the thing, Lem, if you're going to torment it.
Lem turned angrily.
You save your say-so for your young'un. I'll do what I please. You'll not torment nothing long as I got breath to interfere. You want the breath knocked out in you then, eh?
Buck said,
Leave off your meanness a little while, Lamb. You want to fight, too?
The foresters took sides among themselves without rhyme or reason, but this time they all sided with Buck and Penny. They were good-natured from the kill and the catch. Lamb glowered, but put down his fists. It was agreed that Gabby and Millwheel would stay and keep an eye on the cubs in case they chewed loose from their bindings, which ranged from Penny's rope to Buck's deer-hide bootlaces. The rest would return to Forrester's Island for the wagon to fetch the cubs.
Now, can we agree on where to carry him? Penny said. Me and Jody just as good to go on home. I got a little hunting business of my own on the way. You fixin' to go run down that buck?
Lem asked suspiciously.
If you got to know my business, I'm fixing to go on to Juniper Spring and shoot me a gator. I need grease for my boots, and I want to smoke me the tail for meat for my dogs. Now, you satisfied?
Lem didn't answer. Penny turned to Buck.
Don't you reckon St. Augustine's the best place to sell them cubs? Well, if the price ain't right, it'd be worth a try to go on to Jacksonville. Jacksonville, Lem said. I got some business there myself.
I got a gal in Jacksonville, Millwheel said, but I got no business there.
If she's the one got married, Buck said, you sure as the devil got no business there.
Penny said patiently,
it's Jacksonville, then. Now, who's going?
The Foresters looked at one another. Penny said,
Buck's the only one of you can trade without quarreling.
Lem said,
the wagon don't go without me.
That's Buck and Lem, then. Now, you want I should go? Ain't room for but three on the seat. They were silent. Millwheel said at last,
you got high shares in the Cubs, Penny, but I sure do crave to go. Come think on it. I got a barrel of something else I'd love to carry and trade.
Penny said,
well, I got no craving at all to go. Buck, I'll be beholden to you to look out for my share and do my trading for me. When do you go, tomorrow?
All right. If you'll stop by tomorrow, me and Ma'll have it figured what all we want you to trade for.
I'll not fail you. You know that.
I know. The party separated. The Foresters went north and the Baxters south. Penny said,
love nor money couldn't get me to the East Coast with them jaybirds. They'll be broke jugs and broke heads all the way along their track.
You reckon Buck'll do us right?
He'll do right. Buck's the only one of the litter was worth raising. Him and poor Fodder Wing.
Jody said,
Pa, I feel peculiar.
Penny halted Caesar and looked around. Jody was white.
Why, boy, you just had too much excitement. Now it's over. You've give out.
He got down and lifted Jody in his arms. He was limp. Penny propped him against a sapling.
You've done a growed man's work today. Now set easy and I'll fetch you a bite to eat.
He fumbled in the saddlebags and brought out a cold, baked sweet potato and peeled it.
This'll freshen you up. When we get to the spring, you take a good drink of water.
At first, Jody couldn't swallow. Then the taste of the sweet potato touched his palate. He sat up and ate it in small mouthfuls. He felt better immediately.
You're just like I was when I were a boy, Penny said. You take everything hard and it leaves you faintified.
Jody grinned. With anyone but his father, he would have been ashamed. He clambered to his feet. Penny laid a hand on his shoulder.
I didn't care to praise you in front of the men, but you done noble.
The words were as strengthening as the sweet potato.
I'm all right now, Pa.
They mounted and rode on. The morning haze had thinned and vanished. The November air was crisp. The sun was a warm arm across their shoulders. The blackjacks flamed. The scrub oaks glistened. The fragrance of the purple deer tongue filled the road. Scrub jays flew across the road. Their solid blue feathered coats, Jody thought, were prettier than the bluebirds, because there was more of it. The strong smell of the yearling bear over old Caesar's rump behind him blended not unpleasantly with the sweat of the horse, the rich smell of the saddle, the deer tongue, and the lingering odor of the sweet potato. He would have a great deal, he thought, to tell Flag when he got home. The finest part about talking to Flag was that he could think most of the talk and not have to try to say it. He preferred talking to his father, but he could never find the words in which to make things clear. When he tried to say a thing that he had thought, the idea vanished while he was still floundering. It was like his efforts to shoot doves in a tree. He saw them, he cocked his gun, he crept close. Then they were gone before he could pull the trigger. With Flag, he could say,
there come the wolves, slipping into the pond.
And he could sit and see the whole thing and feel the feelings again, the fears and the sharp ecstasies. Flag would nuzzle him and look at him with his soft, liquid eyes, and he could feel that he was understood. He came to himself with a start. They had picked up the old Spanish trail through the hammock to Juniper Spring. The spring was at its normal level. Debris from the flood was thick about its banks. The spring itself bubbled clear and blue from a bottomless cavern. A fallen tree lay across it. They hitched Caesar to a magnolia and skirted the spring for gator sign. There was none. An old female alligator, who was almost tame, inhabited the spring. She raised a swarm of young every second year, and she would swim to the bank when called and take meat thrown to her. She was perhaps down in her cave with the years young. Because she was so tame and had been there so long, no one ever disturbed her. Penny was afraid that someday a stranger would come and kill her, finding her easy prey. They worked down the bank of the run. A chipoke flew. Penny put out a hand behind him to halt Jody. On the opposite bank was a fresh gator wallow. The mud had been packed smooth where they turned and rolled their hard bodies. Penny dropped to his haunches behind a buttonwood bush. Jody dropped behind him. Penny had reloaded his gun. There was shortly a commotion in the waters at the swift-running creek. What seemed a log lifted not quite to the surface. There were two bumps at one end. The log was an 8-foot alligator. The bumps were its heavy-lidded eyes. It submerged again, then raised clear and lifted its forequarters to the bank. It crawled slowly to the wallow, heaved its bulk up and down on its short legs, flipped its tail, and lay quietly. Penny drew a bead more carefully than Jody had ever seen him do on bear or deer. He fired. The long tail thrashed wildly, but the body sank instantly to the mud. Penny ran upstream, around the head of the spring, with Jody at his heels, and downstream on the other side of the wallow. The broad, flat jaws were opening and closing automatically. Penny held them shut with one hand and gripped a foreleg with the other. The dogs barked excitedly. Jody took hold, and they dragged the body to firm ground. Penny stood up and wiped his forehead with his sleeve.
"That's light totin' for a little bit," he said.
They rested, then bent to the work of slicing out the tail meat, which smoked would make convenient hunting rations for the dogs. Penny turned back the hide and sliced out the layers of fat.
"The gators is one thing got fat on the flood," he said.
Jody sat back on his heels with his knife in his hand.
"And likely the moccasins and the turtles," he said.
"And the birds now," Penny said. "All excusing the turkeys, the birds ain't suffered particular."
Jody pondered the strangeness of it. The creatures of the water and the creatures of the air had survived. Only the things whose home was the solid land itself had perished, trapped between the alien elements of wind and water. The thought was one of those that stirred him, and that he could never bring to earth to share with his father. It moved now across his mind like a remnant of the morning's haze. He returned to the fat of the alligator. The dogs weren't tempted by the gator's flesh, just as frogs were not to their taste, or coots, or ducks that fed on fishy matters. But when the tail meat, pink as veal, was smoked, the foreign taste and odor would disappear, and they would eat it when no better meat was at hand. Penny emptied the lunch from the saddlebags and filled them with the strips of meat and of fat. He looked at the package of food.
"Can you eat now, boy?"
"I can near about eat airy time."
"Then we'll eat it just to be done with it."
They washed their hands in the running creek and went to the head of the spring for drinking water. They lay flat on their bellies and drank deeply. They opened the lunch and divided it evenly into two portions. Penny left a biscuit filled with mayha jelly and a square of cassava pudding. Jody accepted them gratefully. Penny looked at the small, protruding belly.
"Where you put it all, I can't see. But I'm proud I got it to give to you. There was times when I were a boy, they was such a passel of us, my own belly lay mighty flat."
They lay comfortably on their backs. Jody stared up into the magnolia tree over him. The undersides of the thick leaves were like the copper of the pot that had belonged to his mother's grandmother. The red cones of the magnolia were beginning to spill their seeds. Jody gathered a handful and dropped them idly on his chest. Penny rose lazily and fed the dogs the scraps. He led Caesar to the spring to drink. They mounted and turned north toward Baxter's Island. West of Sweetwater Spring, Julia began to work a trail. Penny leaned down to look at it.
"Now, that's a mighty fresh buck track she's got there," he said. "I've a notion to leave her foller it."
Her tail was in constant motion. Her nose was glued to the ground. She moved ahead rapidly. She lifted her nose high and began to trot with a gated motion, scenting only by the wind.
"He must have cut in right ahead of us here," Penny said.
The trail kept to the road for several hundred yards, then turned to the right. Julia gave a high, thin cry. Penny said,
"Now he's closed. I'll bet he's laying up right in the thick."
He rode into the thicket after the dog. She bayed, and a buck swayed to its knees and leaped to its feet. The buck was in full antlers. Instead of rushing away in flight, he charged headlong at the dog. The reason was instantly plain. A doe lifted her smooth, unhorned head beyond him. Because of the interruption of the flood, the deer were late with their mating. The buck was courting and ready for fight. Penny held his fire, as he did often when a thing was strange. Old Julia and Rip were as amazed as he. They were fearless with bear and panther and wildcat, but here they had expected the game to run. They retreated. The buck pawed the earth like a bull and shook his antlers. Julia gathered her wits and jumped for his throat. He caught her on his horns and tossed her into the bushes. Jody saw the doe wheel and bolt away. Julia was unhurt and came back for action. Rip was at the buck's heels. The buck charged again, then stood at bay with lowered antlers. Penny said,
"I'm sure sorry, old feller,"
and fired. The buck dropped, kicked a moment, and lay still. Julia lifted her hound's voice in a howl of triumph. Penny said,
"Now I hated to do that."
The buck was large and fine, well fattened on acorn mast and palmetto berries. His red coat of summer, however, was already shabby. It had turned to the winter's grayness, the color of the Spanish moss or the lichens that grew on the north side of the pine trees.
"A month from now," Penny said, "what with running all over the scrub courting, he'd have been poor and his meat stringy."
He stood beaming.
"Now, ain't this our day, boy? Ain't this just our day?"
They dressed the buck. Penny said,
"I mistrust can old Caesar tote all we got."
"I'll walk, Pa. Do the buck weigh more'n me?"
"As many stone again. We'd both best walk."
Caesar accepted his load patiently. He seemed to have no fear of the yearling bear as he had had of the large one. Penny walked ahead, leading him. Jody felt as fresh as though the day were only beginning. He ran in front. The dogs trailed behind. It was not much afternoon when they reached the clearing. Ma Baxter wasn't expecting them so soon. She heard them and came to the gate to meet them. She shaded her eyes against the sun, her heavy face lightened at sight of the game.
"I don't mind staying alone when y'all come home with sich as that," she called.
Jody broke into a babble of talk. His mother only half listened, concerned with the quality of the meat of buck and bear. He left her and slipped into the shed to Flag. There was not time to sit and talk. He let Flag smell his hands and shirt and breeches.
"That's bear smell," he told him. "You run like lightning, do you ever smell it close? And that's wolf. Since the flood, they're wusser'n the bear. But we sure cleaned them out this morning. There's 3-4 left, and you run from them. Now to other smell is your kinfolks," he added with a horrified fascination. "Maybe your daddy. No need to run from them. Yes, they is, too. A old buck will kill a fawn or a yearling, Pa says, times and rutting season. You just run from everything."
Flag switched his white tail and stamped his feet and tossed his head.
"Don't you say no to me. You listen to what I tell you."
He untied him and took him outside. Penny was calling him to help with the carrying of the game to the back of the house. Flag bolted at scent of the bear, then returned to sniff cautiously from a distance, craning his slim neck. The skinning and cutting up of the meat took the rest of the afternoon. Dinner had not been cooked. They weren't hungry, and Ma Baxter waited and cooked the big hot meal an hour ahead of the usual supper time. Penny and Jody ate ravenously at first, but were suddenly so tired that appetite left them when they were half through. Jody left the table to go to Flag. The sun was only now setting. His back ached and his eyes grew heavy. He whistled Flag in. He had wanted to listen to his mother's and father's talk about the trading and to decide what he wanted from Jacksonville for his special portion, but his eyes wouldn't stay open. He stumbled into bed and was instantly asleep. Penny and Ma Baxter spent the evening discussing their most urgent needs for the winter. Ma Baxter drew up at last a list, carefully written in pencil on ruled paper. A bolt good wool for hunting jeans for Mr. B and Jody. A half bolt purty blue and white check gingham for Mrs. B. Now a real purty blue. A bolt domestic, a sack coffee beans, a barrel flour, a axe head, sack salt, 2 pound soddy, 2 sticks lead for shot, buckshot, 4 pound, some more shell cases, Mr. B's gun, 1 pound powder for shells, homespun, 6 yard, hickory shirtin, 4 yard, Osnaburg, 6 yard, Brogan shoes, Jody, 1 half choir paper, 1 box buttons, pantaloon, 1 paper shirt buttons, 1 bottle castor oil, 50 cents, 1 box worm candy, 1 box liver pills, 1 pain cure, 1 vial laudanum, 1 doe camphor, 1 doe paregoric, 1 doe lemon, 1 doe peppermint. Now, if enough money left, 2 yard black alpaca. The foresters stopped the next morning on their way. Jody ran out to meet them, and Penny and Ma Baxter followed. Buck and Millwheel and Lem were crowded together on the wagon seat. The wagon body behind them was filled with a quarreling, wrestling, whining tangle of shiny black fur shot through with flashes of small teeth and claws and pairs of bright, beady black eyes. Their individual ropes and chains were hopelessly tangled. A barrel of moonshine whiskey stood in the middle. One cub with a longer chain had climbed to its top and sat loftily above the tumult. Jody jumped up on a wagon wheel to peer in. A clawed paw went past his face and he dropped back to the ground. The wagon load was bedlam. Penny called, "Don't be surprised, do all Jacksonville take out and follow you?" Millwheel said, "Maybe it'd raise the price," Buck said to Jody. "I can't get over how Fodderwing would have loved to have seen him." If Fodderwing had been alive, Jody thought wistfully, the two of them might have been taken along to Jacksonville. He looked longingly at the cramped space on the floorboards under the men's feet. He and Fodderwing could have sat there comfortably, and so have seen the world. Buck took the Baxter's list. He said, "This look like a heap of things rode out here. If we don't get a good price and the money don't hold out, what must I skip?"
"The gingham and the domestic," Ma Baxter said. Penny said,
"No, Buck, you get Ma's gingham, whatever come. Get the gingham and the axe head and the shell cases and lead, and the hickory shirtin', that's Jody's portion."
"Blue and white," Jody called. "All mingledy, Buck, like a joint snake."
Buck shouted, "Well, if there ain't money enough, we'll stop and catch some more bears."
He slapped the reins over the backs of the horses. Ma Baxter shrilled after him,
"The wool cloth's the worst needed."
Lem said,
"Stop this wagon. You see what I see?"
He jerked a thumb at the deer hide stretched on the smokehouse wall. He jumped down from the wagon seat and opened the gate and walked with long, rangy strides to the smokehouse. He turned aside, searching. He discovered the antlers, drying on a nail. He walked deliberately to Penny and knocked him against the smokehouse wall. Penny went white. Buck and Millwheel came hurrying. Ma Baxter turned and ran into the house for Penny's gun. Lem said,
"That'll learn you to lie to me and slip off that away. Wasn't going after the buck, eh?"
Penny said,
"I'd ought to kill you for that, Lem, but you're too sorry to kill. Getting that buck was pure happen so.
You're lying."
Penny turned to Buck, ignoring Lem.
He said, "Buck, no man's never know me to lie. If you all had remembered that, you'd not have got beaten that dog trade." Buck said, "That's right. Don't pay him no mind, Penny."
Lem turned and stalked back to the wagon and climbed into the seat. Buck said in a low voice,
"I'm powerful sorry, Penny. He's mean at best. He's been this way ever since Oliver taken this gal away from him. He's got ugly as a buck deer that can't find his doe.
Penny said,
I was aiming to give you all a quarter of the venison on your way back. I'll swear, Buck. This be hard to forgive.
I'd not blame you. Well, don't fret about your share in the cubs or the trading. Me and Millwheel can tie lemon knots every time he need it.
They returned to the wagon. Buck lifted the reins and turned the horses around. He would pick up the north road past the sinkhole. It would take them through Hopkins Prairie, past Salt Springs, and so north to Palatka, where they would cross the river and perhaps spend the night before proceeding. Jody and Penny watched after the wagon, and Ma Baxter, peering from the door, set down the gun. Penny went into the house and sat down. Ma Baxter said,
Why'd you take it from him?
When one man's unreasonable, the other's got to keep his head. I ain't big enough to fight him just so. All I could have done was to have taken the gun and shot him. When I kill a man, it'll be for something more serious than a ignorant man's meanness.
He was plainly unhappy.
Now, I would love to live peaceable, he said.
To Jody's surprise, his mother said,
I reckon you done the right thing. Don't set studying about it no more.
He couldn't quite understand either of them. He was filled with resentment at Lem, and with disappointment that his father had let him go unpunished. He was confused by his own feelings. Just as he had changed his allegiance from Oliver to the Foresters, Lem betrayed his father. He finally solved it in his mind by deciding to hate Lem, but to continue to like the others, especially Buck. The hate and the friendliness were of equal satisfaction. There was nothing in particular to be done in the way of work, and he spent the morning helping his mother peel pomegranates and string the peelings to dry. They were the best remedy, she said, for dysentery. He ate so many pomegranates that she was afraid he would need the remedy before it was ready. He liked to bite the transparent crispness from around the seeds. Chapter 25. November slid into December, with no more sign than the high, sad cry of the wood ducks flying. They left their hammock nests and moved from lake to pond and back again. Jody wondered why some birds cried in flight while others were silent. The whooping cranes gave their rusty call only in motion. Hawks screamed from the air but sat still and frozen in the tree. Sapsuckers were noisy on the wing but gave themselves to the bark of trees with no further sound than the tat-tat of their pecking. Quail spoke only from the ground, and soldier blackbirds shrilled from the rushes. Mockingbirds sang and chattered day or night on the wing or perched along the fences or in the pokeberry bushes. The curlews were coming south. They came every winter from Georgia. The old ones were white with long curved bills. The young ones from the spring hatching were gray-brown in color. The young curlews made fine eating. When fresh meat was scarce or the Baxters were tired of squirrel, Penny and Jody rode old Caesar to Mullet Prairie and shot half a dozen. Ma Baxter roasted them like a turkey, and Penny swore the flavor was even sweeter. Buck Forrester had traded the bear cubs in Jacksonville for a good price. He had brought the Baxters all the articles on Ma's list and a small sack of silver and copper and change to boot. Relations between the Forresters and the Baxters were strained since Lem's attack on Penny, and after the settlement, the big dark men rode by without stopping. Penny said,
Likely Lem persuaded the rest I really meant to cheat about the deer. We'll get it all straight one day,
Ma Baxter said.
It suits me just as good to have nothing to do with them.
Now, Ma, don't forget how Buck lit in when I was snake bit.
I ain't forgot, but that Lem's like a snake hisself, turn and strike at you just 'cause he hears the leaves rustle.
Buck stopped one day, however, to announce that he believed they had accounted for all the wolves. They had shot one at the corral, had trapped three more, and had seen no sign of one since. The bears were giving them constant trouble. The most troublesome was old Slewfoot, whose maraudings were taking him, Buck said, from the river on the east to Lake Jumper on the west. His favorite stopping place was the Forester Corral. He watched the wind and eluded both dogs and traps, slipped into the corral, and made off with a calf whenever it pleased him to do so. The nights the Forester sat up and waited for him, he didn't appear. Buck said,
"It'll not do you much good to look out for him, but I thought I'd pass the word."
Penny said, "My lot lays so close to the house, maybe I can catch him at his tricks."
"Aye, thank you."
"Buck, I've been wanting to say something. I hope you ain't mixed up in your mind about that buck Lem got so ornery about." Buck said evasively,
"That's all right. What's one deer? Well, so long."
Penny shook his head and went back to his work. It disturbed him not to be on friendly terms with his only neighbors in his small scrub world. Work was light, and Jody spent long hours with Flag. The fawn was growing fast. His legs were long and spindling. Jody discovered one day that his light spots, the emblem of deer infancy, had disappeared. He examined the smooth, hard head at once for signs of horns. Penny saw him at it and was obliged to laugh at him.
"You sure expect wonders, boy. He'll be butt-headed till summer. He'll not have no horns till he's a yearling. Then there'll be little old spacky ones."
Jody knew a content that filled him with a warm and lazy wonder. Even Oliver Hutto's desertion and the Forester's withdrawal were distant ills that scarcely concerned him. Almost every day he took his gun and shot bag and went to the woods with Flag. The blackjack oaks were no longer red, but a rich brown. There was frost every morning. It made the scrub glitter like a forest full of Christmas trees. It reminded him that Christmas was not far away. Penny said,
"We'll flunk around till Christmas, and we'll go to the Christmas doings at Volusia. Then, after that, we'll get down to work again."
Jody found a patch of Cherokee beans in the pine woods beyond the sinkhole. He gathered his pockets full of the bright red seeds. They were as hard as flint. He stole a large needle and a length of stout cotton thread from his mother's sewing basket and took them with him when he went prowling. He sat down in the warmth of the sun with his back against a tree and strung them laboriously, a few each day, to make a necklace for his mother. The seeds were strung unevenly, but the effect pleased him. He carried the completed necklace in his pocket so that he might look at it often, until it began to have a sticky appearance from crumbled biscuits and squirrel tails and other such articles. He washed the necklace at the sinkhole and hid it on a rafter in his bedroom. There had been nothing special for Christmas the year before, except a wild turkey for dinner, because there had been no money. This year, there was the money left from the sale of the bear cubs. Penny set aside a portion for cottonseed and said the rest might be spent for Christmas. Ma Baxter said,
"Now, if we go into the doings, I want to go trading to Volusia for then. I want me 4 yards of alpaca so I can have Christmas decent."
Penny said,
"Wife, your figure's no secret. I ain't quarreling, for you're plumb welcome to all I got. But seems to me 4 yards won't no more'n make you a pair of drawers."
"If you got to know, I aim to fix over my wedding dress. It's long enough, for I ain't growed up nor down. I done my growing sideways, and I aim to set in a piece down the front so's it'll meet around me."
Penny patted her broad back.
"Now, don't take on. A good wife like you deserves a piece of goods to set down the front of her wedding dress."
She said, mollified,
"You just tootlin' me. I don't never ask for nothing, and you get so you don't expect me to ask for nothing."
"I know. It frets me, you making out with so little. I'd love to fetch you a bolt of silk. Do the Lord spare me, one day you'll have a well of water at the house and not have to wash no more at the sinkhole."
She said,
"I want to go to Volusia tomorrow."
He said,
"Now give Jody and me a day or two to hunt some, and maybe we can carry some meat and hides to the store, and you can trade to your heart's content."
The first day's hunt brought nothing.
"When you ain't looking for deer," Penny said, "they're all over the place. When you hunt 'em, you'd think you was in a tormented city."
A puzzling incident occurred. South of the island, Penny tried to put the dogs on the track of what appeared to be a small yearling or a well-grown fawn. The dogs refused to take the trail. Penny did a thing he had not done in years. He broke a switch and thrashed old Julia for her stubbornness. She yelped and whined, but still refused. The mystery became clear at the end of the day. Flag showed up, as he had made a habit of doing in the middle of the hunt. Penny exclaimed sharply, then knelt to the ground to compare his tracks with those the dogs had refused to follow. They were the same. Old Julia, wiser than he, had recognized either the track or the scent of the newest Baxter. He said,
"That makes me feel right humble. A dog knowing what you might call kinfolks."
Jody was elated. He felt a deep gratitude to the old hound. He should have hated having Flag frightened by their pursuit. The second day's hunt was more profitable. They found deer feeding in the swamp. Penny shot a large buck. He trailed still another, a smaller, and jumped it in a bay head. He gave Jody a shot, and as he missed, shot it down. They had come on foot, for slow trailing was the only chance these days of getting game, except by accident. Jody tried to carry the smaller deer, but its weight knocked him almost to the earth. He stayed with the kill while Penny went back for the horse and wagon. Flag was with them when they returned. Penny called,
"This pet of yours loves a hunt as good as the dogs."
On the way home, Penny pointed out where the bears were feeding. They were eating the berries of the saw palmetto.
"Hit cleans them out and tonics them. They go into their winter beds fat as butter. The bears is like to be our salvation for fresh this year."
"What else eats the berries, Pa?"
"The deer loves them. And leave me tell you, do you fill a demijohn with them and pour Cuby rum over them and leave them stand 5 months, you've got a drink would make even your ma shout hallelujah, could you once get a downer."
Where the palmettos began to grow on higher land and merge into blackjack, Penny pointed out narrow trails leading into the gopher holes. The rattlesnakes had denned up for the winter, but on warm, bright days they came out for a few hours and sunned themselves near the holes. It seemed to Jody that all the invisible creatures of the scrub walked in plain sight before Penny's eyes. At the house, Jody helped him skin the deer and dress out the hides and the hindquarters, which would be the only saleable portions. Ma Baxter fried the meat from the forequarters and put it down for keeping in its own fat. The bones and scraps were boiled in the wash pot for the dogs. The family feasted that night on the hearts and livers. There was not much wasted on Baxter's Island. In the morning, Penny said,
"We got to agree now. Will we stay with Grandma Hutto tonight or come home? Do we spend the night? Jody's got to stay here to milk and feed the dogs and chickens."
Jody said,
"Trixie's near about dry, Pa, and we can leave feed. Leave me go, but please let's stay with Grandma Hutto."
Penny said to his wife,
"You want to stay there tonight?"
"No, I don't. Her and me don't never swap much honey."
"Then we'll not stay. Jody, you can go, but no teasing to stay after we get there."
"What must I do with Flag? Can't he follow along so Grandma can see him?"
Ma Baxter burst out.
"That blasted fawn! They ain't never been such a nuisance on the place, even counting you."
He said with hurt pride,
"I reckon I'll just stay here with him."
Penny said,
"Now, boy, tie up the critter and forget him. He ain't a dog, he ain't a young'un, though you've near about made one outen him. You can't carry him places like a gal would a play dolly."
He tied Flag reluctantly in the shed and changed into clean clothes to go to Volusia. Penny was dressed in his broadcloth suit with the shrunken sleeves and his black felt hat on top of his head. The roaches had eaten a hole in the brim, but it was, after all, a hat. He had no other except his wool hunting cap and his palmetto field hat. Jody was in his best, brogan shoes, homespun breeches, big wire grass hat, and a new black alpaca coat bound with red tape. Ma Baxter was clean and crisp in a new dress made of the blue and white checked gingham from Jacksonville. It was a darker blue than she wanted, but the check was pretty. She wore her blue sunbonnet, but carried her black frilled bonnet to put on when she should approach the village. It was pleasant, jogging down the sand road in the wagon. Jody sat on the floor of the wagon body with his back against the seat. It was interesting to see the scrub drop away behind him as he watched it. The sense of progressing was more acute than when he faced forward. The wagon jolted, and his thin rump felt bruised by the time they reached the river. He had nothing much to think about, and he gave himself over to thoughts of Grandma Hutto. She would be surprised to know that he was angry with Oliver. He pictured her face with satisfaction. Then he felt uncomfortable. He felt toward her exactly as he had always felt, except that through the summer, he had actually forgotten her. Perhaps he wouldn't tell her that he was through with Oliver. He saw himself being kind to her and maintaining a noble silence. The imagined scene pleased him. He made up his mind definitely to inquire politely after Oliver's health. Penny had the deer meat in two pokes. The hides were in crocus sacks. Ma Baxter had a basket of eggs and a small pat of butter to trade at the store, and another basket containing gifts for Grandma Hutto, a quart of new syrup, a peck of sweet potatoes, and a shoulder of the Baxter sugar-cured ham. She would not have gone empty-handed, even to the house of an enemy. Penny hallooed on the west side of the river to call the ferry from the east. The sound echoed down the river. A boy appeared on the opposite bank. He came leisurely. For an instant it seemed to Jody that the boy had an enviable life, pulling the ferry back and forth across the river. Then it occurred to him that such a life was quite without freedom. There would be for such a boy no hunts, no jaunts into the scrub, no flag. He was glad he was not the ferryman's son. He said, "Hey," to him with condescension. The boy was ugly and bashful. He helped lead the Baxter's horse on the ferry with lowered head. Jody was filled with curiosity about his life. He asked, "You got a gun?" The boy jerked his head sideways in a negative and fastened his eyes on the east shore of the river. Jody recalled Fodderwing longingly. From the minute he used to come in sight, Fodderwing had talked to him. He gave up the new boy as a bad job. Ma Baxter was anxious to do her trading before she went visiting. They drove the wagon the short distance to the store and laid their articles of exchange on the counter. Storekeeper Boyles was in no hurry to trade. He wanted news of the scrub. The foresters had given an incredible account of conditions after the flood. A few hunters from the Volusia Territory had been there and had reported game almost impossible to find. The bears were troubling stock along the river, which they hadn't done in years. He wanted Penny's verification of the tales.
"It's every word true," Penny said.
He leaned over the counter and settled himself for talk. Ma Baxter said,
"You know I can't stand on my feet too long. If you men'll agree on your trade, I'll do my buying and go on to Ms. Hutto's. Then you can talk here all day."
Boyles weighed out the meat promptly. With venison scarce, he could find a ready sale for it at a good price. The river steamer would take a haunch or two by way of novelty to the English and Yankee travelers. He examined the hides carefully and at last expressed his satisfaction with their condition. He had an order and could pay $5 each. The rate was higher than the Baxters had hoped for. Ma turned to the dry goods counter with a complacent air. She was high-handed and would have only the best. He was out of brown alpaca. He could send for it by the next boat, he said. She shook her head. It was too far to send back for it from the island. He said,
"Now, why don't you take a dress length of this black alpaca and start new?"
She fingered it.
"Sure is purty. How much did you say?"
"Oh!" She turned away. She retreated into her pride.
"I said brown and I meant brown," she said coldly.
She bought spices and raisins for a Christmas cake. She said,
"Jody, go look and see as old Caesar broke loose."
The request was so absurd that he gaped at her. Penny winked at him. He wheeled quickly so that she could not see him smile. She meant to buy something to surprise him for Christmas. Penny would have thought of a better excuse to get him out of the way. He went outside and stared at the boy who tended the ferry. The boy sat and studied his own knees. Jody picked up bits of limestone and aimed them at the trunk of a live oak up the road. The boy watched him furtively, then came behind him without speaking and picked up bits too and hurled them at the tree. The contest continued wordlessly. After a time, Jody thought his mother would have finished, and he ran back into the store.